This is the Cinema for All podcast,
a celebration of going to the cinema
with Jack Chell and Abby Standish.
Welcome to the Cinema for All podcast. We're your hosts,
Jack Chell
and Abby Standish, and we're part of the Cinema for All team. Thank you so much for listening to the episodes so far. If you haven't, go check them out. There's lots of fun stuff in there. We've got some really great episodes coming up as well. We're looking at representation, queer cinema, female filmmakers, foreign language cinema, so much to come. We just love film.
Yeah, and we've also released a couple of mini-sodes. One is an interview with the writer and director of Pincushion, Deborah Haywood, and also one of the lead actors, Joanna Scanlon. That's Terry from The Thick of It. It's very exciting, so give that a listen. The other more recent one is us guesting on another podcast called Shot Reverse Shot, and we're chatting about our response to a recent controversial tweet by Mark Mode. Have a listen to that one. That one's great too. As we've established so far, our podcast is not just about film.
Though we do chat about film a lot.
Yeah, it's a celebration of the act of going to the cinema. The great films you watch there, the people who organise film screenings, and the very special experience you have when you sit down without distraction to take in a story. Today's episode is very exciting for us, as we're finally going to talk to you about what makes going to the cinema so special, especially DIY film screenings, which is a slightly trendy way of saying volunteer-led cinema. First, though, before we get into it, we want to send you off to our website, cinemaforall.org.uk, where you can find your nearest community cinema, and if there's not one nearby, please get in touch with us and we will help you get your very own community cinema started. We will help you!
We will help you, absolutely! Today's episode features an interview we've been the most excited about when planning this season. Our main gal, Marjorie Ainsworth, is going to be chatting to our colleague Ellie about what it's like to spend over 80 years putting on films for other people.
Can you imagine 80 years? That's
80
bonkers.
Years doing anything.
I know.
That's amazing. I could eat biscuits maybe for 80 years, but...
Oh, but first, what's going on in the world of film? So, Abby, you go to the cinema more than me. What have you seen lately?
I do go to the cinema a lot. I feel like I've been slacking, but I did go and see The Incredibles 2.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and I really enjoyed it. It's very fun. Fun little caper. Nice little call to spy movies. The credit sequences are a little bit like all those great Hitchcock...
Nice.
Who's that by?
Saul Bellow.
That's it.
No?
Yeah.
Saul Bass.
Saul Bass.
Who's Saul Bellow?
I don't know, but I want to meet Saul Bellow as well. Saul Bass. Really, really good. Nice characters, funny. And the short film at the beginning that they always treat us to.
Yeah, I always forget about those. I think people go and see those perhaps even more than they go and see the main feature, actually.
Yeah,
collect them.
It's quite a special way to get you to the cinema. I like that they hark back to that idea. And a lot of community cinemas show short films before features as well.
That's true.
Makes it nice and different.
Yeah, it's a nice way to kind of bulk something up. And again, it's that kind of nostalgic feeling of something else paired with the cinema screening. Because when you go in the past, you get a newsreel, you get a cartoon, you get something at the end.
Yeah.
That's why trailers are called trailers, because they'd be played after the feature. They would trail the film.
Ooh,
fun fact. Did you expect a fact today?
Maybe we should have like a little dingly theme tune.
Yeah, Jack's fun fact.
Jack's fun fact. Yeah, that was a good one. Also, not forget, there's another one coming up, but we'll wait for that. You'll know when it hits. What have you been to see recently?
Well, you spoke about in the last episode when I went to see the Vertigo re-release, and it was absolutely spectacular.
So good.
Although I kind of forgot that the beginning bit is a little bit sleepy. You know when he's just driving around San Francisco in his car?
Yeah.
And he looks tired, and his eyes are drooping, and you're like, oh, it's a bit warm
Well, he's
here.
A retired cop, isn't
yeah,
he? He's
yeah, yeah.
He's not doing, having a good time.
No. So, but, you know, once it really kicks in, you're like, yeah, this is spectacular. And the restoration is incredible. So, yeah, really glad to see that. But other than that, I've been kind of living a bit of an introvert life.
Mm-hmm.
Been watching stuff on Netflix, been watching stuff on Now TV, got those subscriptions. I watched Like Father, which just came. It's a new film that's just come onto Netflix. It's got Kristen Bell and Frasier.
Frasier. He's always known as Frasier, a.k.a. Kelsey Grammer, whoever that is. But
just love him. Put him in more stuff. He's great.
Great.
It's very cute, actually. I think it's the sort of film that's like, it's a nice Friday night film. It's really relaxing. Nothing particularly challenging happens. And it's good. And it's not embarrassing, but I watched Thor Ragnarok last night on my Now TV subscription. Not big into the superhero movies, but I thought perhaps this was the one for me, like Taika Waititi. It's got a bunch of New Zealand stuff going in. A lot of Antipodean actors. It was like spot the Aussie, spot the Kiwi.
Yeah, a bit of a gothy Kate Blanchett.
Yeah, very gothy Kate Blanchett. She's very hammy, actually. She's very... Have you seen Jupiter Ascending?
No, but I want to.
So she reminded me a little bit of Eddie Redmayne in that. He's right. Very hammy, very over the top. But yeah.
I think with villains, you get to.
Yeah,
you could tell
she was having the time of her life. Yeah. She was. But yeah, I enjoyed it. But I still find them a little bit too fast for me. It was like when I went to see the Lego movie. And I was like, I don't think this is for grown-ups. I have no idea what's happening. It's happening so quickly.
It's crazy. I think my favourite part of that film was Tessa Thompson.
Yeah, I know.
She's just incredible.
Isn't she incredible?
Forever
she's great.
Always.
She's very funny. I mean, it's a very funny film. It's very sarcastic. It's kind of very cutting. But yeah, she's great in it. Chris Hemsworth's great in it. Mm-hmm. It was really good.
Excellent. But what is coming out soon? What have we got to get excited about?
So coming out, there's a Mildred Pierce and the Women double bill, basically like a Joan Crawford double bill that's being re-released nationally.
Yes, please.
Are you a Joan Crawford fan?
I am. I mean, I'm more of a Bette Davis gal, I will say.
Yeah, I know, you've got to pick one.
It's a bit like Blur and Oasis all over it.
Yeah, and I think that's, it's a Baby Jane thing, but also Feud. You watched Feud, didn't you?
I watched Feud. Incredible series. Love it. I mean, I like hearing more about Joan Crawford's story. Really fascinates me.
Yeah.
But I think as an actress in the films, Bette Davis is my gal.
Yeah, she's definitely the gal. Yeah. Although from a campy perspective, I love Joan Crawford because of Mommy Dearest.
Yes.
She's the most quotable film of all time. That's something somebody needs to do, an immersive cinema screening of that, where you just throw wire hangers around the room. It's really fabulous.
I would go to that.
I know. It would be great. We should put it on.
I've not seen the original Mildred Pierce, you know. I've only seen the Todd Haynes TV show.
Was that the Kate Winslet one?
Which is amazing.
Yeah, but no, it's great. It's very, very atmospheric. Yeah. It's brilliant, actually. It kind of transcends its time. So I'm glad that it's getting a big screen re-release and people can become familiar with that version instead of the more recent version, which is also great, but...
Well, this is it. Re-releases are so good because it reminds me, you know... Get out of your house and remember you want to see this film.
Yeah, I know. I'll stop staying at home and watching things on Netflix.
Who wasn't Passag, sorry.
What else is coming out? The Eyes of Orson Welles, a documentary.
Yeah.
Just coming out. You like Orson Welles?
Yeah, I'm interested. With Orson Welles, I find that I watch more kind of those things on YouTube and things of him doing sort of educational talks. I mean, very serious. Just using his voice and having
Fraser Crane voice.
Very Fraser. Some films by Orson Welles. I'd like to watch that because it's about the locations he used, right?
Yeah. I think more than an Orson Welles fan, I'm kind of a Joseph Cotton fan. So Joseph Cotton was his pal.
Yeah.
And he was in a lot of films. He was in The Magnificent Ambersons and Citizen Kane. A really, really great actor, really underrated. And I think he kind of suffers from being in too many Orson Welles films that people kind of forget who he is. He's just like a bit of a sidekick.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's the main character in The Third Man.
But
yeah, he's fabulous. He's great. So I don't know if he's going to pop up in that film.
Shout out to Joe Cotton.
Yeah.
Great name.
So there's a big one coming out this week that we've been excited about for a long time. So that's The Spy Who Dumped Me.
I'm so excited about it. Every film like this, I'm there in the
opening
night.
You love a spy film. You like that Melissa McCarthy
Spy.
Imaginatively named
film.
Spy.
Yes. Excellent film by Paul Feig.
Yeah.
Jason Statham. Taking the mick out of himself from start to finish.
Yeah.
Excellent.
It's good. So The Spy Who Dumped Me, it's got Mila Kunis and Kate McKinnon in.
Comedy duo.
Kind of waiting for Kate McKinnon to kind of blow up on the big screen, really. She was so good in Ghostbusters, Lady Ghostbusters, as I like to call it.
She was so good, yeah.
Yeah.
I think she will. I think she's got potential to not even just act in comedy as well. I think she might.
She still keeps showing up in kind of cameos and small spaces. And I really think she's got like leading lady potential. So hopefully this kind of bust her out of that.
Well, I read that the director really wanted to, Susan Fogel, I think it is, really wanted to bring that
out
of
lady
her.
Filmmaker.
Yes, triple F rated this one. And she was saying, you know, we wanted to bring that out to showcase her, which was good. And there's also the Christopher Robin film. We're really bringing back that Winnie the Pooh stuff.
Yeah, it's kind of that nostalgic Winnie the Pooh, Peter Rabbit kind of era. Mm. A lot of kind of... This has got a CGI animation in as well.
It has. I do think... I saw a trailer for it the other night and the teddies, you know, Pooh and Tigger and Piglet, all look really good. So I don't know. I don't know what it's going to be like. Maybe there's hope. Maybe it's because of the recent success of Paddington.
I think so. I think everybody's trying to get on that Paddington bandwagon.
Paddington train.
But Paddington was quite like progressive, wasn't it?
Yeah,
like,
I really loved Paddington. Yeah, and even though it's CGI animation, it still looked really, really good.
Yeah.
We like to bring back those old stories, don't we?
Yeah. I like Ben Whishaw. So Ben Whishaw is the voice for Paddington, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
So originally it was Colin Firth. but he was just sounding too grumpy, so they had to recast him. Like, he just wasn't sweet enough as a teddy bear. I feel sad for Colin Firth that he's not been able to pull that off.
Maybe they should write something about a grumpy teddy bear that Colin plays.
Yeah.
I'll watch it.
Yeah, somebody make that film. We'll watch that.
And Black Klansman's coming out, Spike Lee.
Yeah, I'm excited.
So prolific, this filmmaker. Yeah. Continuing. Like, how long has he been making films now?
Like, late 80s, early 90s. I don't think he's had, like, a huge success for quite a while, actually, though. And I think this is going to be the one. I think this is, it's got great reviews, it's got a really great cast. It's probably going to be showing up in award season. So, yeah, I'm really excited for this one. It's based on a true story as well. It's one of those films that I think is quite tongue-in-cheek and quite funny, but at the same time has this horrendous, shocking history and really recent history as well.
Like, I feel like he's good at balancing those two things.
Absolutely. And kind of making people realise that black men being lynched in America didn't happen that long ago.
No.
It's like the 60s, 50s, 60s. It didn't
recent
happen that
history.
Long ago. And people really need to be aware of super, super brutal things that were happening in the very recent past so that we can prevent them now.
I'm glad that the film exists.
Yeah.
Under the Tree as well.
Yeah, you've seen
I've
that,
seen
haven't
Under
you?
Under the Tree. Yeah, that is a black comedy.
Is this the Icelandic one?
The Icelandic one. Neighbours not getting along, but it all escalates. Pretty interesting. I think it's going to be a bit of a Marmite film, but I think that's good. At least you'll have a reaction.
Yeah.
It's nothing worse than coming out of the cinema feeling really indifferent.
I think Icelandic films do kind of Marmite people because I think it's like a specific kind of humour. Maybe it's a humour built on being really cold and not having a lot of daylight or having too much daylight, depending on what time of year it is.
Yeah.
I find that a lot with foreign language films. Sometimes people really respond to it and sometimes it really sort of, it's like a chalk and cheese thing. So we've noticed that with French comedies.
Yeah.
Like
50%
of people think they're the most funny thing ever and 50% of people are like, what is the joke? What's
it's
happening?
Very specific type of comedy.
It's just Gerard Depardieu on a bike. I don't get it. I've noticed that with Icelandic stuff. It's quite specific.
Yeah. But Rams was really successful and it's from the producers of Rams as well. So I think maybe if you like that, you might like Under the Tree.
Brilliant. Yeah. So go and see those films. Like, go and actually see them in the cinema. Don't be a jack and wait for them to come out on Netflix.
If you can go opening weekend, because that's how best to support a film.
Definitely. But if you've got to wait a little while, go and see it at community cinema.
Absolutely.
Because all of these films will be popping up near you locally, a little bit cheaper. So
with
give that a go.
A smile. Animateen is a celebration of British animation happening right across the UK until November 2018.
Led by Film Hub Wales and Chapter Cardiff with a host of partners, expect a wide range of film screenings and events, showcasing the best of British animation, past, present and future.
Visit animateen.co.uk for more and join the conversation on social media at animateenuk, hashtag animateen.
Animateen is supported by the BFI, awarding funds from the National Lottery, by Arts Council England and by the British Council.
So today's theme is DIY cinema. So we're talking about the thing that we are most excited about.
Very.
The thing that is our full-time jobs is helping people put on screenings in their community. So sometimes it's called volunteer-led cinema. Sometimes it's called community cinema. Sometimes it's called DIY cinema. We're hearing a bit more of that term lately, which I think is quite a cool term for it, really. So, Abby, when did you first go to a kind of a DIY cinema screening?
I think my first, like, full one was Secret Cinema.
Oh, yeah.
But it was actually, it was meant to be Brazil, the film.
Yeah.
But for one reason or another, it got cancelled. But they put on, like, a, we're sorry, screening. But it ended up being really good.
Yeah.
And it was still secret. And we didn't know what it was. It just said, you know, dress 80s. And I was like, well, I'm in for that.
Easily done.
Easily done. My day to day. Went in and it was Footloose.
Oh, actually,
which
that's better.
I'd never seen.
That's better than
Brazil. So it was, yeah. I mean, I think I was a bit more into this. And they had actors and they were doing this whole thing. They did like this basically a court drama about whether we're going to keep dancing in the town or not. And then the film went on and it was really great because everyone was kind of wooing at the dancing and sort of like booing the domestic violence, which was definitely into. Definitely boo that.
Yeah.
And everyone was just really friendly. And then there was this huge disco and all these balloons fell down.
Oh.
And it was one of those discos where you literally couldn't go for a week because everything was a banger. It was just tune after tune.
Yeah.
And we danced the whole night through and there was popcorn and stuff to do. Great. Brilliant.
Oh, that's fantastic.
It was really good. I had such a good time that three people separately asked me if I was one of the actors because I was having such a good time.
Oh, that does not surprise me about you at all, Abby. that's the most Abby anecdote I could ever think of. People just thinking you're part of the whole show.
I just thought I was Kevin Bacon for 3 hours.
Yeah.
It was great.
Why not?
Yeah.
Running through a warehouse, doing your dancing.
That's it.
In your skinny tie.
Living my best life.
Yeah.
What about you? What was your first experience?
So I grew up in Stoke, and at the time, I don't think there were very many community cinemas. We've got Stoke Film Theatre, but I growing up, I can't remember there being very many community cinemas or film societies. So probably the first one that I engaged with was Film Unit. So I went to the University of Sheffield, and there's a very, very long-running student cinema here in Sheffield called Film Unit. And I think I went on the first week and I went to see Breakfast at Tiffany's, which is my favourite childhood film, actually. I rewatched it this weekend and it is still great.
So
I don't care. It's still great. And I paid 50p. to go and see it. And I took my boyfriend at the time and he was like, I don't understand this film. What is this? I was like, maybe this is through. but that's what they did for Freshers Week. They put on like 5 screenings and they were all 50p each and it was incredible. So I got such a film education experience there. I saw The Third Man there for the first time, which is, again, one of my favourite films. We got to request films. So if there were films that you'd heard about but they weren't being properly released, you could request them. They would put them on.
That's so cool.
And they did such a good job. So that was really, really special. But apart from that, until I got my job here at Cinema for All 10 years ago, I didn't know about them all over the country. And I think that's true for a lot of people. They don't know that there are community cinemas perhaps near where they live. So it was quite a special and magical thing when I started to do the job. I was kind of doing a 2-day-a-week admin thing and people would send in their programs and we could see what they were screening. And I was like, what is this? This is amazing. There's so many of them. They're showing such incredible stuff. Mm-hmm. And I remember picking up Forest Rose Film Society's program, which was just a kind of printed on coloured paper, just black print. And at the time, they could only show films on 16mm. That's the only kit they had. And in those days, it was harder to get a hold of some equipment to be able to show your own film screenings. So they were still using the 16mm, which meant that they had really creative limitations on their program. There's only certain things that they could get a hold of. And it was expensive and it was heavy and it was hard to do. But when I looked at the program, I was like, look at this stuff. Look at this amazing stuff they're putting on. I really want to do this. I really want to be involved in this and I really want to be kind of immersed in this world. So it was quite a special moment for me when I realised, like, this is great and it's happening everywhere. It's like this little secret society, a little world you didn't know exist of people putting on film screenings wherever they want, whenever they want to, for like £4. It was incredible.
So punk.
I know. And that's kind of how it got started, actually. It's got a little bit of history for you.
Oh.
Jack Facts.
Play
that jingle.
Diddle-loo.
So the first film society, it was actually set up in 1925 and it was funnily enough called the Film Society. And some of the founding members included George Bernard Shaw. Hello, famous person. H.G. Wells, very, very famous person. And the first show that they screened included the feature film Waxworks and Champion Charlie, which is Charlie Chaplin short. So that was the very first kind of volunteer-led screening. Obviously, there were a lot of cinema buildings that existed around the country then, a hell of a lot more than existed now. But even then, people were coming together to put on their own film screenings and put together their own programme that said something about who they were. So there's a lot of real proper history behind the Film Society movement. And then the film societies that existed in 1946 came together to form the British Federation of Film Societies, which is us. That's our official name, everybody, the British Federation of Film Societies. And obviously now we're called Cinema for All, but that's the kind of heritage of this movement. People have been doing it for such a long time. The oldest continuously running one is Manchester and Salford Film Society. Another extremely old one. I'm sure they'll battle it out over who is actually the oldest, but Edinburgh Film Guild up in Scotland.
Yeah.
So just so much heritage.
Brilliant. I love that it's so, like, it's from such a long time, people have been needing to get together and put on films in their own way.
Yeah, since almost the early days of cinema.
So good.
Yeah. But things have changed probably more recently. People are starting to screen films in a slightly different way. We've noticed more immersive cinema screenings. Mm-hmm. We've noticed younger people are starting to do this, whereas perhaps when I started this job 10 years ago, it was a lot of more retired people that lived in rural areas. It's now all sorts of people all over the country, all ages, really, really getting into it. And it's probably because it's a bit It's a bit cheaper and a bit easier. And people want that ownership of their own kind of cinema, what they want to show.
Absolutely. I just remembered, actually, 10 years ago, I went to a Twin Peaks one.
Did you?
Yeah, I don't know why I forgot about
that. Where was
that? It was, like, outdoor and in some warehouses as well in Leeds. And there was a cherry pie contest. There was music from the film. There was a caravan in which you could go and see the log lady.
What?
And she would read your future.
That's so cool.
I've just remembered it now.
Did you dress up? You make a good
Dressed
Laura Palmer.
Up. Yeah, I could be
you could
Laura
do,
Palmer.
Wrap you in plastic.
Oh, so dark.
Sorry, that's
so
very
chilling.
Dark. Very dark. But people are doing loads of immersive cinema screenings
yes.
now. We hear about incredible ones all the time. Really, really inventive stuff. So Handmade Cinema here in Sheffield did a Mary Poppins screening in an old umbrella factory.
Brilliant.
Umbrellas dangling from the ceiling. We've got Dungannon Film Club in Northern Ireland. They did a very scary American Psycho screening.
Gives me chills thinking about that room.
It really does. I'll put a picture of it up on the on the podcast show notes, but they basically covered the entire room in newspapers, plastic mannequins, bloody handprints around the room. Very, very scary place.
And they've become so well known for that. They only do about two sort of event cinema screenings a year in their programme.
Yeah.
But their audience just love it so much, they just come dressed up for everything, right? Will you tell me about the Sound of Music one?
Yeah, so they did a Sound of Music one and it wasn't supposed to be an event screening. So the committee weren't dressed up, which is kind of a normal one. But the audience was so into it. They had a couple that came as tea, a drink with jam and bread, and an elderly chap who came as a brown paper package tied up with string. She's just the cutest idea. Who came up with that idea?
Like, I just love the idea of him leaving his house, you know, locking his little Yale lock, walking down to the cinema as a little package with tied with string.
I know, it's so inventive. I want to go to a fancy dress party with these people. They're
Definitely.
Really, really great. So yeah, there's just so much great stuff happening at the moment. And what we really wanted to do with this episode is kind of connect it to the history of the movement as well. So shall we tell them about our really great interview that's coming up?
I think it's time.
So a few years ago, we launched our brand new website when we changed our name to Cinema for All. And we saw this comment, and it was actually in a sea of spam. The main comments we get on our website are just spam. But we spotted like a real one, and it was from a real person, a lady in their 90s. Abby, do you want to read it?
I will. I remember this moment so well.
Oh.
She said, I am 94, older than the BFFS, that's British Federation of Film Societies, by the way, which we've revealed to you recently. I joined the Manchester and Salford Film Society in 1939 when I was 17. Thanks to the Northwest group of the Federation, I've met filmmakers, critics, stars, and other film personalities at their wonderful weekends. To name a few, Paul Rother, Lottie Rannigan, Bill Grundy, Dennis Mitchell, Leslie Halliwell, and many more than I can remember. My late husband, Tom Ainsworth, was presented with the Charles Roebuck Cup by Tony Curtis in 1979. I remember the office in Dean Street and our great friend Dave Waterson. The BFFS has enriched my life. Many, many thanks, Marjorie Ainsworth.
I know.
I'm getting emotional.
Can you imagine us when we read that comment? We were like, are you kidding me?
I remember.
Yeah.
We had like internal fireworks going off.
We did.
One, to get a comment that was not spam.
Yeah.
And two, for it to be so meaningful. This 90-year-old woman reaching out through comments on WordPress.
I know, it was bonkers. And I really recognised the name of her husband, Tom Ainsworth, because she said he won the Roebuck Cup. And we have a very great picture of that in our office because Tony Curtis is in it. And Tony Curtis is handing the Roebuck Cup to Tom. And it's just brilliant. It's one
it's
of those moments
photo.
Where you go, wow, the history of this organisation. Tony Curtis was here. That's pretty cool. So what happened was we ended up inviting Marjorie to come and visit us at the Film Society of the Year Awards in 2016. And we actually gave her the Roebuck Cup for herself. We had it engraved. We invited her to the stage. She gave a beautiful speech. She got a standing ovation. It was a really special moment.
We all cried.
We all cried. And it was just wonderful to see somebody who spent that so much of their life putting on film screenings for other people be honoured in such a way. I think she actually didn't know we still existed.
Yeah.
I think that was such a surprise for her. And she was so delighted to see that now younger people are putting on film screenings. There are a lot of younger people there. And that it's something that hadn't died out. I think up until that point she thought that maybe it had just kind of gone away on a national basis, but nope, we are stronger than ever. And it was really great to welcome Marjorie. In the same year, Ellie Ragdale, who runs Handmade Cinema here in Sheffield, she was awarded the Outstanding Contribution by an Individual Award, which is also a very, very special award. And I think kind of the things started ticking over at the same time, how great it would be to have these two people talk to each other and discuss the differences between what it's like now and what it was like then and see what they could learn from each other and what they could share. So that's what we did. Abby, you went to visit Marjorie with Ellie. Ellie now works for us. She's our community impact officer. And you went over to Manchester with a tin of biscuits. Was it great?
It was great.
You look like teary-eyed now.
I am. It was such a wonderful, valuable experience to have. We took biscuits, flowers. She welcomed us in. She was wearing a lovely shirt and lipstick and was just ready to just tell us about her experiences. What I found really interesting is some are very similar and how an 80-year span,
yeah,
that we've still got similarities and parallels in running screenings today. But I'll just let you listen because it's so good.
Oh, I can't wait.
Yay. So we have arrived at Marjorie's house.
We have.
I'm here with Ellie, also known as the Great Handmade Cinema.
Oh.
Going on your own screenings for such a long time now.
Thank you.
What was it like when you first met Marjorie?
So I met her at the awards and it was just completely inspirational, really. She was just, yeah, such a wonderful woman with so many interesting stories and tales. And it was just really amazing to meet someone that's been doing this for such a long time and still has such passion and enthusiasm for DIY cinema.
Excellent. So now we're about to go have a conversation with this queen. So let's go.
Let's go.
Marjorie, hi.
Hi.
Thank you for inviting us.
You're welcome. Did you get in the car park?
We got a taxi because we didn't end up driving in the end. We've got a train here today.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Oh, you look lovely, Marjorie.
Really? Come here.
Thank you very much.
You. That way.
So this is Ellie, just to remind you, and this
I've
is obviously Marjorie. Yes, at the conference. This way?
That way.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
Well, lovely to meet you again, Marjorie.
Nice to have you.
Thanks for having us in your home. When do you feel like your passion for film kind of began?
It began in 1939 when I was 17 and my boyfriend, Tom Ainsworth, told me I ought to join the Manchester and Salford Film Society. Because he'd been a member for a year, and it was a great experience.
Amazing.
So, yeah.
And were you already interested in film? Did you go and see a lot of film?
Well, in those days, there were six cinemas within walking distance of my house. It was not like the multiplexes now. So you could go to the cinema practically every night. They all had... Monday, Tuesday and Wednesday was one film. They changed the programme to Thursday, Friday and Saturday. No Sunday openings at all. That was against the law. So I must have been to the cinema several times a week as a child and as an adolescent. So I saw most of the output one way or another. It was only threepence or sixpence to go in.
Oh.
So it was not like going for a big night out, you know. Just something everybody did all the time because that's all there was.
That's really interesting. I think for me it was I feel like I really liked going to the cinema when I was a child, and what kind of grew my passion for it was the fact that it was such an event. It was something that you would do as like a celebration thing for somebody's birthday or something like that, and it became like a real like social occasion.
Yeah, so totally opposite from my experience in the 30s, 20s and 30s. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was an everyday thing.
And most people would go that
Most people would go at least once a week. But youngsters would go almost every opportunity.
Amazing.
So I must have seen all the Hollywood output. In its output from Hollywood and Great Britain, I must have seen everything. But I'd really no appreciation of what film could do, you know, at the time.
Where do you feel like that appreciation?
Well, it began when I joined the Manchester and Salford Film Society, and we showed foreign films with subtitles, which I didn't know existed, you know.
Yeah.
So it opened a whole new world for me.
And did you find that the you were able to attract quite a wide audience because you were doing something different with that film society.
Well, at the time I joined, which was during the war, at the beginning of the war, we had quite a big membership. It was about 2,000 members.
Wow.
Which was very different from our beginnings in the 1930s.
Yeah.
Where membership was very small.
Yeah.
But it gradually became more and more known, so we had a big, big membership.
How do you feel like your passion for film has grown over time? Do you feel like it has grown or changed at all over time through running Manchester and Salford Film Society for such a long time?
Well, it's not really changed very much. My passion for cinema is still there, and we have a local home, which is an art house cinema. Mm. Used to be the Corner House,
but
it's moved now.
Yeah.
So, as apart from the Film Society, you could pick up all the new stuff there.
Yeah,
so
it's good, isn't it?
I've kept up with that, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's really nice. Yeah, I think I've definitely found since running community cinema events that it's made me appreciate the immediate effect that cinema can have on an audience. I don't think I studied film at university, mm-hmm. but I don't think I really realised quite how powerful it was until I witnessed it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like you have any screenings that you feel were particularly poignant that you ran through the film?
Well, the most recent one was something that the chairman has a choice. One event in the year is chairman's choice, and it's usually something a bit offbeat.
Yeah.
And she showed The School of Babel, which was a French documentary about emigrant children in Paris in a school.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, our audience, which is sort of a bit middle class, and they said it was great, it got the best rating, and said this is the sort of thing film societies ought to show.
Yeah.
You know, so that really was a very positive feedback immediately from the audience, which was not something I expected at all.
Mm. You've spoken about how running a film society meant that you were able to program different types of films than what the other cinemas were doing. And what other ways do you think community cinema is different?
I don't know, really. I don't know whether you call ours community cinema or not. It's, the membership tends to be sort of middle class and middle aged to elderly, although we're getting some new people in from one of the meetup groups on the internet. And there's a group called the Art Cinema Group, and they come as guests as a rule. And they're very, very pleased about the whole atmosphere of the thing.
Yeah.
And there's a nice auditorium and a nice bar, so we can all get together and talk about the film or whatever. Yeah. It's very good.
I think it's nice to be able to have that space to have those conversations afterwards, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think something that I realised through running a community cinema as well was that it's so interesting to see what people take away from the film, and how just a little moment in a film can be something that people really resonate with or really connect with. And I think in some ways seeing it in a different setting outside of kind of a mainstream cinema as they are now is almost like more personal. Provides more of a personal experience.
That's right, yeah. And we show on a Saturday evening, of course, and it's somewhere to go on a Saturday when television is more or less dire on a Saturday evening. There's nothing to watch. But we have a feedback form So we get immediate feedback. They give a rating to the film. There's one man who comes who hates everything. And doesn't understand.
You always find that.
He doesn't understand what it's all about. You know, why have they made this film?
But he still comes back.
We get some people who write quite deep and thoughtful screeds, more or less. So it's giving them the opportunity to say something they've wanted to say for a long time.
Yeah.
So they get some very well-written feedback about the production values and the performances and so on.
I think you don't get that with mainstream cinema at
all.
You don't get that opportunity. And
no.
I think because I studied film as well, I think it's such a shame that there's not that outlet for people to discuss what they've seen as part of a kind of mainstream cinema experience.
That's right.
Interesting. What do you think is important about bringing people together to watch film? Why do you think that's an important thing to do?
Well, I just think it just gives them an opportunity to see something different.
Yeah.
Get a new slant on things.
Yeah.
This is the important thing. I mean, sometimes they could go to home and pick up a lot of the stuff that we show, but they don't make the effort. But coming to a place where they know everybody,
they're
all the friends are there,
and
they can talk to each other about the film, I think that makes a big difference.
Definitely. I think I screen films primarily for families, and I really like the opportunity for people in different communities to get together as a community to watch something. I think so often, you know, some people will go and see a film on this day and other people will go on another day, whereas this is an opportunity for the whole community to come together and watch a film together as a community. And I think you're completely right, or I completely agree with what you're saying in terms of it provides you with an opportunity to see a different way of life.
With like-minded people.
This
is an important point,
I think it's also such a good tool to develop empathy and learn about other people's experiences and stories. So running a film society or a DIY cinema can come with its fair share of challenges. What do you think is one of the challenges that you've had to face during your time with Manchester?
It's been dependent really on my husband, who ran the place more or less for about 50 odd years, and we showed in with 16mm film, and he got ill. He developed Alzheimer's actually, and he found threading the 16mm projectors very, very difficult. So then we changed to DVDs, and we've had all sorts of fraught occasions when we were moved about and at different venues, and then one venue would be impossible for one reason or another and we'd have to quickly find somewhere else. But we've now been settled for about 20 years in our present value at the Altrincham Little Theatre.
Oh, nice. That makes it a lot easier being based in one space,
I imagine.
My screenings are kind of pop-up around
different communities in
Sheffield.
We've shown you some very strange places.
From
huge cinemas on a Sunday afternoon to tiny little holes where it was so small we had to use back projection on a tiny screen. You know, the place would only hold about 30 people to, you know, getting a membership, which we've got now, about 140-odd.
I think at times you can think, why am I doing this crazy
thing?
But then when people come together, it feels worth it.
I know when we were in a place called Platt Chapel, we used to run special days where we'd show a whole load of films in one day, like the Satyajit Ray Indian films. There were three of them. So we showed the whole trilogy,
amazing.
Which usually meant me making vast amounts of curry. And we showed the Polish trilogy. They had to make vast amounts of borscht. And once again from the Gorky trilogy, another lot of Russian stuff. So it was doing things like that as well. They were very popular and something we couldn't contemplate doing now.
Yeah. Oh, it's amazing though. It sounds such an amazing experience.
Yeah. And then Platt Chapel was set on fire by some burglars. So I had to do a lot of scrubbing of seats and things like that so that our membership wouldn't be influenced by all this filth about the place. So it's been quite a slog sometimes.
Yeah. And what is it for you that makes it all feel worth it?
Well, the fact that people still want it, you know. We still want to come and didn't want it to close. I mean, we got down when Tom was ill to very, very small, just 20-odd people.
Mm.
And we were on the brink of really closing down. But, you know, the committee and one or two members said, oh, no, no, no. And then we got this, John Grieve got us this new place and slowly built up the membership again. So
amazing.
We're quite healthy now. Yeah.
And you ran or, like, helped with some other film societies, didn't you? I think I read that you did, like, a science?
Oh, yes, a scientific film society. Yes, we used to run that, yes. And we were also running things, something called the Youth Area Film Council, which was to try and get schools to make their own film societies, and we used to hire a film once a month, and it used to go around a lot of schools in the hope that we could turn sixth formers on to appreciating film. And that didn't last long.
No.
they didn't want to know.
I feel like sixth formers now would be a very different story. I think people are really into film.
Yeah. Well, most universities and colleges have a film society now.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
That's great. and with the Scientific Film Society, what kind of things did they do?
Well, in those days, when we ran it, there were lots of films you could get free from various big companies that were scientifically informative. You could get them for free. So we used to, that was usually be mostly the sixth formers. There was some terribly boring things as well as interesting, but it made you interested in science. You could see what was going on in business and in scientific research. I remember sort of sitting through three episodes of Corrosion, parts 1, 2, and 3. it wasn't very, very interesting, but the membership kept up until things changed, and I don't know what it was, but companies stopped making these sort of films, and you couldn't get anything to make a programme, really.
Yeah.
No.
And you said that you joined initially because of your boyfriend at the time, and what was the rest of the kind of team like? Who kind of made up the film society at the point where you?
Well,
joined in.
We were not really involved in running it when we were joined as members. But after the war, Tom was co-opted onto the committee. And I was not involved for quite a while. Then the secretary left because he had a job in the south of England, and Tom was persuaded to take over as secretary. So that was when we became involved, and I was just sort of in the wings doing a lot of work, but not really on the committee. And then I was co-opted onto the committee, and from then on, Tom did the film booking, and the committee chose the films.
Mm.
Now we have a very democratic way of choosing the programme. So it's the members who choose the programme, really.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. Amazing. And so that kind of way of working's transformed over time then?
Oh, yes, it did. Yeah. It did. It's become much more democratic.
Mm.
So, that was something that John Grieve started. It was always the committee who chose the films.
Mm.
It was always the BFFS produced the monthly film, or the BFI produced the monthly film bulletin.
Mm.
So you were always kept up to date with what was going on.
Yeah.
Absolutely, that was great.
Yeah. Mm. That's really interesting.
Yeah.
And do you find that the people that are in the committee now or assisting with the Film Society now, are they all people that have been doing it for a really long time, like yourself, or
no, not really. Can't think of anyone who's been in it as long as I. Although we've got some stalwarts who've been in it, you know, only a couple of people who've been in it for donkey's years, but mostly they're fairly new, who joined in perhaps the last 10, 15 years. Mm. We've got a new audience completely.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's really nice, isn't it, how through something like volunteer cinema you get to meet new people, and I think you've, through putting on events together, you form quite strong friendships.
Yes, with those people. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I know that, like, initially I found it really hard to identify like a really good team of people that were really reliable and had the same level of passion as me.
That's right.
But when you find them, it's like gold dust,
it is,
isn't
indeed.
It?
Yes, when John Grieve became the secretary, he was just amazing. He did everything himself. Now, this last year, he retired as secretary. And it took about 8 people to do what he was doing.
Yeah.
He was doing everything. It's amazing. They've done really quite well to pick up the various threads of what has to be done nowadays.
Yeah.
Getting licenses and things like that. But, yes, it's working very well. And There's only one person on the committee who doesn't really like the way we work.
Yeah.
I think he really wants us to show more popular films, you know. Apart from that, we're very smooth running.
Yeah.
Film. Yeah.
Yeah. I think once you get the right.
And I think the internet and people having computers has done an awful lot. Because it used to be quite difficult to organise things when you were on the phone or you wrote.
Yeah.
But now everybody's got a computer and they've found something to do with the computer. So it's spread out like that. Yeah. So there's emails splashing backwards and forwards.
Yeah.
Which used to not be... You couldn't do that.
Yeah.
You would have to telephone. So you didn't get a sort of communal opinion about anything, really.
Yeah.
Well, now you get strings of emails and you think, when is this going to stop? And everybody's reply, and it goes on forever.
It's not just you, Marjorie. I think I feel exactly the same. How do you think it's changed with... your audience has changed with inventions such as the internet and computers and being able to advertise what you're doing through that. Do you think it's made it easier for you to get members? Do you think it's...
I think it is easier now. We've got a nice website which people go to. And we can get our programmes out in advance through MailChimp.
Yeah.
So it's great. Yeah, it's great.
And how would you used to advertise things in a world before social media and the internet?
Well, we used to put a notice in the local evening paper, or I remember when we used to advertise in The Observer and The Guardian and Amazing. Places like that.
Yeah.
But it was more or less always word of mouth that
yeah.
that brings most people in.
I think that's still the case now, really. Even though there's, you know, all these different
different ways of reaching people, but it really is word of mouth.
I think it's the best way to get people through the doors.
That's right. Isn't it? Yeah.
Personal recommendation. And obviously, running a DIY cinema is completely voluntary, so you would have to make money elsewhere. What did you do outside of this? What did you do work-wise?
Before I retired, I was... the last job, I was at the Didsbury College of Education teaching the B.Ed. Honours degree in educational psychology.
Wow, that sounds interesting. Yeah. So different to film, isn't it?
Yeah. But I did try to use film whenever possible.
Did you? Yeah. Just work it in wherever you can.
That's right.
That's great. Yeah.
What did it feel like for... So you both just talked about the reward of people just arriving at a screening you've organised, and that kind of keeps you going and hearing the feedback from people. But you both have won an award and been recognised for your work and commitment to community cinema and DI cinema. What was it like when that was announced that you'd won these retrospective rewards?
I was amazed. I mean, John just said to me, you're getting an award. I said, what for? And he said, oh, it's Cinema for All. He said, do you want to come to the conference? So I said, well, if I'm getting an award...
I'll make an appearance.
So I managed to... I don't know whether I'll do it again, but I managed to make it with assistance. And I was just astonished that I'd got the Roebuck Cup, which Tom had got years ago, 1975, I think, something like that. So I was astonished. And when I read, when I listened to the sort of application that the Film Society had put through to Cinema for All, I hadn't realised that they thought anything about me at all. And so I was absolutely amazed to hear this citation, which was incredible.
It was incredible.
We were in tears that day. So not just your Film Society, but everybody in the audience who had never met you but could connect to the fact that you've had a commitment like they have to putting on their own film screenings. Do you remember the speech you gave, Marjorie?
I remember a bit. Because I was thinking, you know, it sprung on you, so you've not prepared anything, you haven't a clue. So I just remembered something about saying, keep going to films, it keeps you in touch with the zeitgeist.
Yeah, that's what I remember you saying.
And will prevent you having a mouldy old age.
That's right. And you got a standing ovation, do you remember that?
I do, yes, it was astonishing. I mean, I never had such appreciation for anything in my life.
We also had a photograph of you where, when you were leaving that evening,
that's right,
everybody made like
an archway
for you to walk out with. So you, people still talk about you winning that award today.
Really?
Yeah. So you are very inspiring to so many of the people, and you yourself, Ellie. So what was it like when you won your award?
Yeah, I think similar to Marjorie in that it was quite a big surprise. Mm. I think I'd had quite a difficult year with my community cinema. A lot of what we do is very reliant on public funding, and we'd put in for lots of funding bids and not got them, and we'd worked a lot of projects back to back, so I was really, I'd been really tired and really burnt out, and felt a bit more like, why am I putting so much of myself right. into something where I'm not getting any financial benefit from it at all? And I think going to the Cinema for All Awards is always such an amazing feeling, because that's, you totally realise why you're doing it, because you feel exactly the same as the other cinema exhibitors that are in the room. You get their worries and their concerns and their joy and their passion, you share it with them and you go, okay, yeah, I'm not a complete idiot, you know, there are other people like me as well that feel the same thing. But I think it was just a really wonderful way of kind of feeling like I'd had a bit of outside recognition for the hard work that I'd put in. And I think it's very easy to just carry on doing what you're doing and not take a moment to really appreciate it. So I felt like it was a really nice way of being able to look inwards at myself and be like, actually, no, you do a lot, and this is why you do it, and your words of like, keep going, I think the rest of the room just resonated with that so much, because I think a lot of people are reliant on public funding when they're running their own cinemas, and a lot of people have been struggling to try and find a way to make ends meet and keep people coming back to their cinema and keep momentum going, and you know, all of the struggles that we find with running our own cinemas. And I think, yeah, your encouragement was like a call to arms for everyone to just do it and keep going and know that it is worthwhile and what you're doing does serve a purpose and does have worth.
Yes, yes, I agree with you. Every word.
I feel like the Chariots of Fire music should come on there. That's so inspiring, and you sound like, you know, heroes in your own movies. Who are some of your film heroes or films that have really spoken to you as community cinema organisers, but also as audience members?
Oh gosh, I can't remember.
You've got a lot to pick from, imagine.
Yes, gosh.
I feel like for me, I always seem to come back to the film Matilda.
Yes.
Which I know we were discussing a bit earlier, but I feel like Matilda was my first kind of female hero in a way. I think she was such an incredible character that showed such like strength and intelligence and determination as a young girl in the face of like adversity with a horrible head teacher and horrible parents and stuff like that. So I think I remember watching that film as a child and just absolutely loving it. It was one of the only films that we had on video, and me and my sister would just watch it again and again and again and could just quote every single line to it. And so I think she was kind of like one of mine growing up. And we recently screened that film, and I'd kind of not been thinking about it for years, and I rewatched it and was like, yeah, this is, you know, this is someone that I've taken so much inspiration from. And the way that she kind of stands up for herself and stands up for other people is just really lovely and empowering, as to see as a young girl, to see someone doing something like that is really inspirational. And it was nice to show it to a group of children that have perhaps not seen that film. And they seemed to really enjoy it. And there was one girl I overheard having a conversation with her mum, and she was like, I really like books and I really just like reading. And she was like, I think I'm a bit like Matilda, aren't I? And I was like, yes, you are like Matilda.
Wonderful. I can't remember any particular film that I had that sort of experience with, because I've seen so many that I've suddenly thought, yes, I understand that, yes, I've got that. Yeah, that's an important way of looking at things, you know. Something like Hiroshi and Mon Amour, won't you? And you think, gosh, you know, that's got something important to say And you sort of tease it out and think, I agree, yes, I agree with that, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. Well, you've been through outer turmoil and inner turmoil during your screening life, right from the war and somebody setting fire to your venue and you scrubbing that away, ready for people to come and still enjoy a film, and you applying for all these funding bids and just not feeling like you're being heard or getting anywhere, and also trying to always galvanise whether it's the people that are going to be on your team or an audience to come and see your films. Why is it important to do it yourself, to put on film screenings, to create a community to do that?
I just think it's just been so important to me that I'd like to other people to have the same experience, have the same feelings about cinema. Not just cinema, but things in general, because you come across so many different points of view in film that you want to tease out and think about. And I've had that experience, and I think, well, it's been valuable to me.
Mm.
So it's, you know, I hope it's going to be valuable to a lot more people.
Yeah, I completely agree. Yeah, I think it's having that passion myself. I can't imagine not doing it.
That's right.
I can't imagine, you know, it just feels like everything's slotting into place for me, really. And I think all of my, like, passions for film and cinema and for bringing people together, it's just the perfect alignment of those. And I completely agree with what you're saying about, you know, wanting to give other people that experience as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think nowadays, I think there's so much less ways in which we can come together and have, like, a real shared experience together. Especially as a younger person, it's so hard to find those moments. Whereas I think in film, and especially through the medium of DIY cinema, it's just the perfect way of bringing people together for, like, a really present experience.
Yeah,
people
right.
are really in the room, they're there because they want to be with other people that they know, meeting other people in their area, and I think that makes it such a special experience.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. I've been in awe. I'm just sat on the floor like an enlightened child, because this has been so good. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Join Cinema for All in Sheffield on the 7th to the 9th of September for the UK's biggest gathering of community cinemas, the Community Cinema Conference and Film Society of the Year Awards. Tickets start from just £85 for the whole weekend. Jack, tell them what they get included with that.
They get 3 panel sessions, 3 masterclasses, 7 films, delicious food, great beer, great wine, dancing and a pizza party. The Film Society of the Year Awards are the highlight of the weekend. We'll be celebrating the most exciting and innovative community cinemas in a ceremony presented by the Lord Mayor of Sheffield, Majid Majid.
If you want to learn more about community cinema or meet other community cinema organisers, come along. Learn more and book at cinemaforall.org.uk/events.
Oh, Abby, that was magnificent. That was really, really lovely. I'm quite emotional thinking about it.
I know. Me too.
I really loved the way she talked about the habit of cinema going and what that used to be like. And obviously, for some of that time, there was no TV and there was no internet. Mm-hmm. So going to the cinema, it was like a focal point of the community. But I think we would love to get back to that, where people could afford to go all the time, where it's kind of affordable to go on a more regular basis and maybe take a risk with your film choices as well. Perhaps see something that you wouldn't normally see.
Definitely.
Because it's cheap enough to do that, and I think that's why we love community cinema so much.
Absolutely. It'd be great if you could go more often. I'm glad you enjoyed it, because we've got so many exciting things to come. The next episode, we're talking about representation,
Seeing
yourself on screen, the importance of that, and we were lucky enough to have the dreamboat, Delphine Levens,
from
Altitude
so good.
Releasing. She's an incredible distributor, a wonderful woman who brought us so much in the interview. She kind of co-hosted with us. It was
She
really
did, yeah. We're joined by an extra person, and it was fantastic. It was really great. And there were some other surprises in that episode too. So stay tuned. We're also going to be releasing mini-sodes. So do subscribe. Rate and review us if you like this podcast. It goes such a long way. We really appreciate if you do that. But for now, it's time to roll credits.
Producer,
Jay Platt.
Logo designed by
Lydia Lipinski at Thoughts Make Things.
Hosted by
Jack Chell
and Abby Standish, with thanks to
Marjorie Ainsworth, Ellie Ragdale, Deborah Parker, Sheffield Live, and our sponsors, Anime Team.
The Cinema for All podcast is supported by the BFI, awarding funds from the National Lottery.
Thank you!